able to eliminate enough ground targets so their subsequent entry would be easier. Lucas couldn't imagine storming the gates on foot. Despite what the tatters of the uniform he wore might indicate, he was in no way prepared for that kind of combat. A few bandits or cannibals was one thing, but a city full of them? Impossible. The probe returned, and Lucas dialed the ship up to cruising speed once more, making landfall a few minutes later. The village at Qualia was only 100 or so miles ahead, and Lucas took manual control of the craft for the first time since launch hours earlier. Lowering his altitude, he weaved through the mountain valleys the way Alpha had steered the probe, but the ship felt like it was made of lead. Sure, it was no fighter jet, but it felt far more cumbersome than the equivalent virtual model in training. Lucas couldn't tell if that was a flaw in the simulation or if the damage done to the vessel had altered the way it was supposed to fly.
"Prepare for contact," Alpha said through the monitor.
Asha clenched her fists tightly, each wrapped in holo controls.
"Ready."
"Ready,"
Lucas said as he brought up a screen of Asha's turret view so it floated in his field of vision. He'd have to concentrate on flying, but needed to make sure her shots were lined up as well. This had been the stage in the training program he was flying through when Alpha interrupted him. Hopefully he'd learned enough. Mikkel sunk his teeth into a hunk of human thigh, which had recently finished cooking on the fire. It tasted even worse than the last one, which was likely because the wanderers they dragged in were increasingly nothing more than skin and bones. He began to hear a low whine, which steadily increased, and then he watched as the empty shell casing started to dance on the table near the fire. He turned to look behind him and saw a sight he hadn't witnessed in a long time. Grabbing his rifle, he cupped his hand to his mouth and shouted with a deep, booming voice that would have shook the snow off the mountains if there was still any left.
"Alarm! Fremed Vorpen!"
He turned, raised his gun, and was instantly blown into a dozen pieces. There was fire in Asha's eyes as she tore through the village with her first volley. Her monitor indicated 5 confirmed kills, though she'd only seen 2 of them explode on her view screen. Her shots ripped up the street and blew large holes in nearby stone buildings. The incendiary shots set ablaze anything remotely flammable, and she watched with delight as a man stumbled out of a house fully engulfed in flames. As Lucas steered the ship past the camp, she swiveled around and kept firing, her canister shells igniting a few more rooftops before she was out of range. Asha's heart pounded and sweat poured from her brow. A small smile crossed her lips.
"Circling around," Lucas said on the monitor.
The ship was far too bulky to do anything resembling a vertical turnaround, so Lucas banked hard right until the craft, moaning and creaking as it went, made a full loop and had the village in its sights once again. This time around, the cannibals had armed themselves, and Lucas heard gunfire pelt the hull of the ship. Readout said that no actual damage was being done, but he was still waiting for the glass of the view screen in front of him to shatter from a bullet.
"Though it's probably not glass, is it?"
Asha fired back with another volley from her cannons as Lucas roared by. This time her blasts tore through the center of town, incinerating a dozen more hostiles and several of the prisoners tied to stakes. The ones she missed scattered like roaches in every direction. Suddenly, an alarm sounded. "What the hell is going on?" Asha shouted into the monitor as they flew past the town and into the mountains once more. Alpha frantically went back and forth from control to control in the engine bay.
"The guns are overheating the ship's weak core. We will soon have enough power to fly or fire, but not both."
"So what does that mean?" Asha yelled over the sound of the alarm.
"This next pass will be your last,"
Alpha said as his metal hand flittered through readouts.
"Make it count," Lucas said as he veered the ship around once more.
He slowed down his approach to give Asha more time to fire, should she not get the opportunity again. Once more she lit up the town, ignoring the blaring of the alarm in her ears. She watched the shells eat through the clock tower where 2 men were blown out of the top before the rest of the structure crumbled. On the ground, scores of cannibals sprinted for the gate. Focusing her fire on them, she tore across the ash and sand, catching 8 of them in the open before her fire blew a hole in the forward wall near where the gate stood. It was hard to make out if any of them had successfully fled, and if they had, they were too far under the ship to target. Asha quickly focused her gaze back to the village when a rocket-propelled grenade whizzed by her turret and struck the underside of the ship. Attempting to return fire, she was greeted by a flashing red error message in loosely translated English. No fire, it said, and judging by her unresponsive controls and the smoke pouring out of the gun barrel, she knew what it meant. Lucas felt the engine sputter a bit, and the craft dipped suddenly as it left the smoldering town in its rear view.
Alpha, he yelled worriedly. Systems are overheating, and we suffered a direct hit to the... from that explosive device. Weapons are offline, engines at 43%.
There was a hint of panic in his voice.
What do we do? Lucas asked over the blaring of the alarm. We must land immediately.
Lucas brought up a topographic map of the area and scanned through it. The region was quite mountainous, and the computer indicated the best place to land in the area would be the bay. It hadn't seen water for years, and the sands were vast enough to accommodate the relatively large craft. At least the walk to the mothership would be short. The life detection readout, flickering on and off, revealed there were still plenty of people alive down there, though he couldn't tell which were cannibals and which were prisoners. Their bombing run of sorts had softened them up, but there was still more work to be done. Lucas wheeled the ship around, and when he glanced down at the monitors, he saw that while Alpha was still playing with the flickering controls in the engine room, Asha was no longer in her turret. He turned back to the view screen and approached the bay, which fed into the walled entrance to the village. There was no sign of movement on the ground, only smoke rising from flaming buildings and crisp bodies. Had they foregone fleeing to start hiding? Where had they gone? Lucas easily recalled the landing sequence procedures from training, thanks in part, he assumed, to his external neural enhancements, and performed the operation like it was second nature. The ship touched down softly in the sand, though it moaned one last nerve-wracking time before Lucas shut the engines down on Alpha's command. In the viewscreen ahead, he could see the town's wall up at the top of the sandy shore, and smoke rising in front of the massive wrecked ship that loomed behind it. Above it, the same angry red clouds were present that Lucas had found all across America. Transfixed by the scene of extraterrestrial devastation, he didn't even notice Asha until he heard the bolt click. Shit! He instinctively reached for Natalie, propped up against the ship's command chair, but the weapon was already gone. Asha was standing behind him, pointing his own gun at his head with a stern look on her face. Looking down, he saw she was barefoot, and he had to applaud her for doing a damn fine job sneaking through the CIC unnoticed. However, he was disappointed in himself, as he would have never made such a mistake in the wild even a few days ago. He slowly turned the chair to face her. Hello? He said flatly. Give it, she replied, motioning toward him with the raised rifle. Give what? He asked, bemused. It saved my life more times than I can count, and if we're going out there, I need it, along with my other supplies. He noticed that she had already picked up her pack, which had been sitting forgotten at the base of the central console. Lucas was still perplexed. You want... what exactly? Asha looked exasperated. The revolver, idiot! Though it had once been creating quite the annoying, sharp pain in his lower back, Lucas had forgotten about the gun he confiscated from her when they first met. Well, second met. Oh, you mean this? He said as he took the revolver out of his belt and quickly pointed it at her with a hammer already drawn. She raised Natalie and took one step forward. That's the one. And why would I let you have both guns just like that? He asked, trying to remain calm and playful. Asha raised an eyebrow. Because you still have one in your boot, and you can have this thing back once I get mine. You'd just give me my gun back, trade a fully automatic machine gun for a six-shot revolver? The way I see it, there are only about six of them left out there anyway, and that's all the shots I need. And let's just say it has sentimental value. Natalie had sentimental value as well. But Lucas would be damned if he was going to say that out loud. He had to resist referring to it by name during their conversation out of force of habit. It had been the only one who had listened to him during his long trek these last few hard months. So, how do you want to do this then? He asked, letting his grip loosen on the Magnum just a bit. Exchange on three? She said as she drew closer to him. All right. They both began counting. One. As they spoke, Alpha marched straight into the room from the lift corridor, Walking right up to them, he promptly snatched Natalie from Asha and the revolver from Lucas before either knew what was happening. He walked over to the hollow table and threw each gun on it. They were both so stunned they couldn't speak.
"The time for descent has passed," he said plainly. "We must take inventory of all our weaponry for our approach to the ship."
After Asha and Lucas recovered from the shock of the sudden end to their standoff, the table soon became piled with weapons and ammunition. Natalie had about 4 spare clips left, while the revolver had 30-odd shells, despite Asha's insistence she wouldn't need them. Lucas put his boot pistol on the table, which only had the clip that was in it, and his buck knife. Asha had her 2 grenades and a hatchet, but no other firearms. Alpha had spent the last few minutes attempting to activate his old power armor and gun with his spindly mechanical fingers, his other hand clutching another sort of alien power tool like the one Lucas had seen earlier. Finally, a few lights came on in the suit, with fewer lit on the gun. "Will that thing work?" asked Lucas.
"It's only at 18% power, but it will function well enough for our purposes. The material alone will make me largely bullet-resistant."
"Great, and what are we supposed to do?" lamented Asha.
"Do what you have done previously," Alpha said as he strapped the armor over his chest. "Survive!"
After suiting up, passing around a can of tuna fish, and downing a few ounces of water, they exited the ship through a port Lucas hadn't seen before, as it had been about 100 feet underground when he first boarded the ship. After they left, Lucas turned back and saw the vessel he was flying for the first time in its entirety. He'd seen many swooping overhead during the war, but none this close, and he felt a strange kinship to the ship, despite only having flown it for a few hours. Some of the plating was heavily damaged, but the jet-black surface was unscathed near the top, and the arcing lines and flickering blue lights made it look impressive, even if it was a mere transport. Out in the open, he found the air felt different here. It was still stuffy, but not suffocating, and it was certainly hot, but not hellish, as Lucas remembered they were north of the Arctic Circle in the middle of winter. Even if it was milder, a familiar problem presented itself. The whole area used to be filled with bays, inlets, and islands, but now it had transformed into a desert like the rest of the world. If Alpha was correct, it would be uninhabitable within a month or two. Judging by how fast he'd seen temperatures rise recently, Lucas believed it. His clothes were soaked in sweat, partially because of the heat, but mostly due to the task at hand. Looking up at the camp's wall, Lucas wondered what condition the survivors were in and how many would pose a threat. It was the first time he could remember feeling actual fear in months. He thought he'd just grown numb to it, but the pit of his stomach told him otherwise, and he had to steady his hands as he clutched Natalie with white knuckles. He looked to his left and saw Asha holding her magnum in both hands with no signs of tremors. Her hatchet was threaded through her belt loop, and she trudged through the sands in her ripped black pants and knee-high combat boots. 2 grenades jangled on her belt like keys. On his right, Alpha looked far more impressive than he ever had, now that he was fully encased in power armor. It may have been cracked and half-functional, but the plating still made him look imposing, and he carried himself with far more confidence than the slouching scientist Lucas had seen in the holoscreen recording earlier. He supposed Alpha had seen and done a lot since then. They all had. Alpha's good hand clutched the long standard-issue alien energy rifle that Lucas had seen 1,000 times when the creatures swarmed the streets. His mechanical 6-fingered claw, which he explained was not weaponized and only for complex technical procedures, was wrapped tightly around the ship's glowing core, which he said was necessary to stop the mothership's larger core from deteriorating further once they reached it. As they made their way through scores of wrecked fishing boats and approached the wall, the smell of the air became acrid. Whether it was rotting flesh, burning flesh, or some combination of the two, Lucas couldn't be sure, but it was enough to make his eyes water. Periodically, as they moved up the slope, Asha and Lucas slowly turned around to make sure they weren't being flanked from the rear. Life indicators in the ship didn't say there were any stragglers outside the camp, but then again, the system wasn't functioning correctly much of the time. Alpha's powered-down armor didn't have its heartbeat sensor online either. It was one of many functions that fell by the wayside after extreme use. They were going in blind. The wall was a twisted bramble patch of wood, metal, and stone, stacked high enough that it would be exceedingly difficult to climb without being shot by a sentry. But now the makeshift guard platforms that lined the inside had collapsed or were vacant. The gate looked like the most reinforced link of the entire chain, though on the ground now lay the bones of its two heralds. The human and creature skeletons formerly occupying Pike's were shaken loose thanks to a blast from Asha that had decimated an entire section of the wall next to the gate. The crater was still smoking as they carefully stepped through it, weapons at the ready. Smoke clouded their vision, but dissipated as they progressed, and they saw the town laid out before them. On the ground were the bits of Norwegian cannibals that had been caught in Asha's line of fire. Further up, there was a man slowly crawling away from them through the sand, missing the lower halves of his legs, with wide burn marks across his back. Judging by the length of the trail, he'd gotten pretty far from where he'd originally been hit. He didn't appear to have a weapon, but... Thunk! Lucas jolted as an axe appeared in the back of the man's head. Asha crept a little further up to him and removed the hatchet with a crunch, wiping it on the man's rags before sliding it back through her belt loop. Alpha and Lucas hurried up to follow her, and the three fell back into formation. Silence was still of the utmost importance, as they didn't want to start a gunfight if they didn't have to. As they reached the street, it became clear the once bustling cannibal carnival was now a ghost town. There was no phalanx marching out to meet them, as perhaps they imagined that with a functional deadly creature ship also came functional deadly creatures. These men hadn't survived this long without running away from a fight or two they couldn't win, but where were they? The stone buildings hinted at what shops used to reside within. Though only scraps of Norwegian words remained, a bicycle wheel here, a torn-up winter jacket there indicated what the stores used to sell. The glass in all the windows had long since shattered, probably during the firefight that took down the ship or the crash itself. The trio scanned each vacant window carefully until Lucas finally saw what he was looking for. Without a moment's hesitation, he raised Natalie and fired two slugs at the man in the third-story window. The shots echoed down the empty street as the pair of bullets passed through his throat and skull. Lucas heard him collapse in a heap alongside the sniper rifle he had been clutching moments earlier. Alpha and Asha had their gaze jolted upward after the shots, but when two cannibals rounded the corner to see what had happened, they shifted focus. They each raised a weapon, and Asha fired her revolver. The right man's chest caved in, and he flew backward as blood arced out of the wound. At the same moment, Alpha let loose a blast from his energy rifle that took off most of the other man's head, who then crumbled into a heap, and his remaining singed brains spilled out onto the pavement. No further adversaries showed themselves as the sound of the two blasts bounced off the walls and down the street. Bodies littered the road as they marched toward the center of town, stepping over the two fresh ones barring their way. Their clothes were streaked with blood, but the camouflage they wore was unmistakable. Soldiers, Lucas thought. It was always the soldiers. Asha had made quick work of many of them from the sky, and there were few corpses that hadn't lost a limb or two. Unrecognizable, charred chunks indicated there were even more dead than they could see. But still, it wasn't enough. Where had the rest gone? As they reached the main square, the ground was scarred with crisscrossing burn marks from each of the ship's passes. Many of the surrounding buildings were on fire or had already burned down. The field of stakes further ahead in the square was mostly uprooted and splintered, and Lucas couldn't see any bodies hanging from the ones that remained. Further ahead stood the ornate church the captured women had been shoved into. It was fully engulfed in flames, seemingly ignited by a nearby building, unless Asha had specifically targeted it. Lucas raised his weapon as he saw movement at the doorway. Someone was struggling with the heavy plank that barred it. He was about to fire, but as they drew closer, he saw that it was in fact an older woman wrestling with the blockade.
"What the?"
Asha said breathlessly. The woman had to keep shielding her eyes from the flames above and was coughing due to the smoke pouring out from the cracks. She finally managed to lift the plank from the handles, and as she wrenched the doors open, more smoke and flames shot out, knocking her to the ground. She yelled something in Norwegian, but there was no reply from within. All those inside were either dead of smoke inhalation or the flames themselves. She fell backwards to the ground and began to weep. Lucas walked toward her, gun still raised, but his grip loosened slightly. As he moved forward, she raised her head from her hands and saw him. Her eyes widened in horror, and she scrambled to her knees with her arms outstretched above her head. She was wearing a torn apron with a worn dress underneath and was covered in soot from head to toe, with visible burns on her forearms and hands. From the wrinkles caked on her face, she appeared to be almost 70, a true rarity in the current state of the world. She was moaning something in Norwegian as tears continued to stream down her face.
Hjelp! Varsasnil! Barna! Barna!
What's she saying? Asha asked as she slowly approached.
I have no idea, Lucas said.
Alpha?
We have no time for this. End her or leave her, but we must press on, he answered curtly.
Lucas turned to leave, but the woman sprang to her feet and grabbed his arm. Asha quickly raised the revolver to her head, but was stopped by a look from Lucas. She began tugging on his arm and pointing to another part of town to the east.
Come hit, she said pleadingly.
Lucas tore his arm away and shook his head.
Barna, Barna,
she cried.
I don't understand. We have to leave.
He noticed for the first time the broken shackles on her wrists.
You're free now. Go.
The woman looked panicked and then sprinted off in the direction she had been pointing. Lucas briefly thought about shooting her, as this place was now a ruin and she likely had nowhere else to go, but he ultimately decided it wasn't his place. Asha lowered her gun as she apparently came to a similar realization.
What was she saying, Alpha?
I do not know this language, he said quickly. We must continue. Time is of the essence.
Lucas stared in the direction she went, but slowly turned and kept walking toward the downed ship. They moved into a more residential part of town and immediately became far more wary. They could hear cries echoing from building to building. Some out-of-sight cannibals appeared to be injured, wailing from their houses or nearby streets. Others were shouting with more authority. The sounds bounced around too much to pinpoint where they were coming from. The voices sounded distant, but it was hard to be sure, and Lucas clutched Natalie tightly. Searching the rooftops for any sign of movement, none of them were focused on the ground below. Not until Asha's boot hit the tripwire. Buried in the rubble that lined the street, none of them had seen the net that hoisted them into the air. Lucas and Asha were caught so off guard they lost their grip on their weapons, which clattered on the stone street below. Alpha would have likely dropped his as well were it not attached to his suit. Inside the net it was a wild tangle of limbs, rocks, and wood. They thrashed violently out of instinct, but Lucas quickly cleared his head.
Cut! He yelled as he squirmed to reach the knife strapped to his chest.
He heard holographic menus opening and closing, and when he looked over, saw that Alpha had already activated a humming saw on one of his metal fingers and was slicing into what appeared to be a military cargo net that was mercifully not laced with spikes or electrified. Lucas had seen such traps before. Squirming uncomfortably, Asha desperately tried to reach her hatchet, but was twisted in such a way that grabbing it was impossible. Lucas cut through one link with his knife, then two, then three. Alpha was having considerably more success with his automated tool. From her upside-down vantage point, Asha saw men enclosing on their position. Alpha's slices met Lucas's, and the three of them were sent tumbling to the ground below. Ignoring the pain of the 15-foot drop, Lucas and Asha scrambled for their weapons as Alpha raised his, but they were already both in the hands of a bald, one-eyed cannibal standing in front of them. With a wide grin, he had Natalie propped on his shoulder, and he pointed Asha's magnum at them. Lucas instinctively went for his boot pistol, but stopped when the blackness in the corners of his vision subsided, and he could see that they were surrounded by cannibals on all sides, each brandishing a weapon pointed directly at their heads. Lucas began to raise his hands, but his muscles tensed as 10,000 volts of electricity ran through his body, thanks to a cattle prod between his shoulder blades. As he fell limply to the ground, he saw Alpha and Asha set upon in the same fashion, and the searing pain gave way to darkness. Chapter 7. There were no dreams this time, as Lucas's unconsciousness lasted only minutes, not hours. When he came to, he felt his arms hoisted above him. When he looked up, he was glad that the cannibals had found some rope, and he wasn't crucified on the stake where he hung. At least, not yet. To his right, he saw Asha, still unconscious and miraculously with all her clothes still intact. She had a throng of admiring cannibals at her feet, as they surely hadn't seen a woman like her in years. One reached out to touch her torn pants, but his hand was swatted away by the one-eyed cannibal who barked something in Norwegian. On his other side was Alpha, taking up quite a bit more room on his stake, with his feet almost touching the ground. He'd been stripped of his power armor and weapon, and there were bruises on his body, likely from multiple impacts by the stun baton. Though he was conscious, he looked worse than either of them, and his breathing was heavily labored. He'd even been stripped of his translator, as any foreign technology was probably assumed to be dangerous. Before them lay what was left of the village folk, a ragged assortment of cannibals all armed to the teeth. Most had long hair and beards, though a few were inexplicably clean-shaven or had only light stubble. The majority were tall and blonde, as was to be expected given the region, and many were wearing the remains of military uniforms. A few appeared to have scraps of riot gear on, which would explain the electric batons. There were a couple of bulletproof vests scattered amongst the crowd with the word Politi on them. It was no stretch to imagine what that meant. The military and police had been best equipped and trained to survive a war zone like the one Earth had become, and as such he had run into them often in his travels. His own digitally camouflaged cargo pants served as a similar warning to others he came across. A dozen or so other men were in dirty plain clothes, but then Lucas saw the man they had watched on the monitor earlier. The Colossus was even bigger in person and had to be about 7 feet tall, though the power armor made him look 8, a giant in a town of monsters. It was clear from a primal perspective why the rest rallied around him. When he spoke, his voice boomed through the town square.
Spoor them vem de ar!
The man with one eye and both their weapons walked away from Asha, who was now conscious and looking annoyed, and stopped in front of Lucas.
English?
He asked, in a surprisingly high-pitched voice with little trace of an accent. He looked over the tatters of Lucas's uniform.
Yes, English, he concluded. He wants to know who you are.
Lucas said nothing and glowered at the man.
No? No name? No rank?
The man asked with a smile that was eerily out of place in their current predicament. He turned and said something to the chief, who did not look nearly as amused.
How did you fly that ship? Where did you come from? Why are you here?
Lucas answered the barrage of questions with further silence. The one-eyed man smiled.
Okay!
Without a moment's hesitation, he whipped a familiar-looking buck knife out of the back of his belt and jammed it into Lucas's thigh as he lay bound on the stake. He was silent no more, his scream reverberating through the crumbling buildings around them.
Better? You will talk now?
The man removed the knife quickly from Lucas's leg, and blood spurted out of the wound. Lucas cringed and bit his lip so hard that it too bled, but still said nothing. The chief grunted and said something in Norwegian, motioning to Alpha.
Why are you traveling with this thing?
The smiling interrogator asked.
Why are all of you so damn ugly? Lucas spat out.
The one-eyed man laughed.
He speaks, he said,
turning to the crowd of 30-odd men behind him, some of whom gave a low chuckle. He walked over to Asha, knife still in hand.
And what about you? Do you speak? Do you think we're ugly?
He asked her with the same sickly grin. Asha stared daggers at him and attempted to spit, but her mouth was too dry. In the back, a few men were going through Alpha's power armor, attempting to activate it. Only a dim, flickering red light was lit on the gun. A few yards away, two other men were turning the glowing core over, trying to understand its purpose. A shorter man with a large scar across his lip was wearing Alpha's translator like a crown. Back in front of them, the one-eyed man's smile faded.
You attack our town, which we've worked so hard to build. You destroy our food, kill our men, and burn our women, and now you have nothing to say?
The look on his face turned downright menacing.
You will have something to say.
He paused.
Cut her down.
No, Lucas shouted, as two men sliced through the ropes binding Asha's arms. As they came free, the first cannibal got a broken nose, and the second claw marks across the cheek. When her right foot came loose, she knocked the front teeth out of the next closest man. But more cannibals converged on her and pulled her down from the stake. Whatever their problems had been back on the ship, Lucas was now in a frenzy, shaking his stake back and forth violently, trying to free himself to reach her. As his head jerked back and forth, he caught Alpha's gaze to his right. He growled something, but without the translator, it was indecipherable. He turned his head to the side and closed his eyes. Lucas couldn't heed his warning. The right half of the assembled crowd erupted in a blue fireball. The force of the blast sent a shockwave that not only flattened everyone still standing, but knocked over all three stakes, which splintered at their bases. Lucas hit the ground with a thud. His vision was spotted and white from the light of the explosion and the impact of the ground. Looking up, the red sky was brilliant and blinding, and a shadowy figure soon came into view. As his vision came back into focus, he saw it was Asha with his knife, still dripping with his own blood. As soon as she cut his arms free, she flung Natalie at him, which he caught out of reflex, despite his diminished motor skills. She was yelling something at him, but he couldn't make it out, and only heard a low, dull tone in his ears. As he got to his knees, he saw the one-eyed man on the ground to his left, his throat slit and blood pooling in the cracks of the cobblestone. Asha continued yelling, and her voice slowly began to overpower the ringing in his ears. "Fire! Fire!" She grabbed him by the collar and pulled him to his feet, where he faced the crowd. Though many were clearly dead due to the initial blast, some were beginning to rise with their hands over their eyes and ears. Nearly all were disarmed, and Lucas finally realized a unique moment was at hand. He and Asha began unloading into the smoke. Natalie's 35-round clip emptied into the living and dead alike, and those trying to regain their footing immediately came crashing down again, now riddled with bullets. At this close of a range, Asha was making short work of the cannibals with her Magnum, and its 45-caliber slugs made six heads explode before she ran out of ammo. Her throng of attackers must have shielded her from the blast, as she seemed in much better fighting form than anyone, Lucas included. After their initial barrage, the smoke began to clear, and no one was attempting to get up anymore, save one, the Chief. Protected by his power armor, he had only been winded by the explosion. He got to his feet and let out a roar that needed no translation. Attempting to fire his power weapon, he found it non-functional, and in a rage sprinted toward Lucas. A few clicks told Lucas that he too was out of ammo. He prepared to swing his rifle like a baseball bat, but the Chief was on top of him before he could bring it around. As the pair of them hit the ground, he felt his bottom two ribs snap, and an explosion of pain surged through his body. Natalie cascaded down the stone street out of his reach. The Chief lifted a fist the size of Lucas's head and prepared to merge his face with the ground. Asha had dropped her own empty gun, and she flung herself at the Chief, grabbed his arm, which was almost as thick as her waist, and pried him off of Lucas using every bit of her strength. He tossed her aside, but as he did so, Lucas saw his knife stuck in the man's shoulder blade. He didn't even seem to notice. Lucas winced from the pain and scrambled to find a weapon. Nearest to him was a sawed-off shotgun with a severed arm still clutching it. Lucas stripped the limb away and raised it at the Chief, who had now turned his attention to Asha. The blast caught him in the chest, but the armor, even in an unpowered state, was enough to deflect the buckshot. As he staggered back a few paces, Asha sat up and raised a police-issue pistol she'd found on the ground. The man put his hand up and cried out in pain when she shot two rounds through it. She continued pulling the trigger, but the gun jammed, and she threw it away in disgust as she rose to her feet. Lucas ran up to the behemoth, now clutching his pierced hand in agony, and with a well-placed shoulder lunge knocked him off balance onto the remains of his dead comrades with a crunch. Lucas stood over him with a sawed-off shotgun in hand. The Chief caught his breath and slowly lost his wrathful demeanor. Growing calm, he looked at Lucas and spoke softly.
"Ye varen skole ladet."
Lucas pulled the trigger, and the man's face exploded into a mist. Asha walked over to the headless corpse.
"What did he say?"
From behind them, a deep mechanical voice spoke.
"He said he was a school teacher."
Alpha had freed himself from his down stake and was resecuring his translator to his neck, which miraculously was still intact, as was the glowing core he was holding at the end of his reaffixed metal claw.
"We were fighting that thing and you were getting dressed?"
Asha said incredulously.
"You looked to be in control of the situation,"
Alpha said matter-of-factly.
"I thought you didn't speak the language," said Lucas.
Alpha fiddled with the controls of his mech arm and stayed silent. As he turned, Lucas could see that he had burns up the right half of his body.
Are you...
I have suffered no permanent damage. You are much more resistant to heat than you humans. We also heal faster.
What the hell just happened? Lucas asked, as Asha scooped up her magnum and pulled her hatchet from the one-eyed man's belt.
As soon as we were in the net, I activated a countdown on my suit's core.
You did what? Asha said as she turned her head his way.
Capture was imminent, and I knew it was our best chance of survival.
What if you were still wearing it?
They would not let us keep our weapons and would certainly strip me of the suit. I had hoped it would be placed close enough to cause sufficient chaos, but far enough where the blast would not consume us all. My calculations were almost accurate.
He winced as he touched a burn on his chest with his claw. Predicting their next question, he answered it.
The suit was built with such functionality in the event of enemy capture, though usually the occupant would incinerate along with it.
He pointed to Lucas's thigh.
You must tend to that until we get back to the ship.
Lucas had forgotten about his injury during the adrenaline-soaked gunfight, but saw that he was still bleeding profusely, and that wasn't even counting whatever had happened to his ribs. As he searched his body for more pain, he discovered his right arm ached from crashing out of the net. Here you go, Asha said, as she threw him a scrap of non-bloody fabric torn from a dead cannibal's outfit. Outside of a few bruises, she looked none the worse for wear, despite what the unhinged mob had almost done to her. Though, despite her cool attitude, her hands were visibly shaking for the first time. Lucas tied the cloth around his leg firmly, and Alpha seemed satisfied about his ability to continue. Asha finished picking up her confiscated gear and slung a non-melted tactical assault rifle over her shoulder, throwing a few clips into her pack. Bending over one of the hole-filled corpses, she pulled off his bulletproof vest and secured it to herself. Lucas thought it might be wise to do the same, and digging through the gore, found another intact vest for himself. Picking up a few shells from the ground, he decided to add the giant-slaying sawed-off to his arsenal, and then walked over to pull his buck knife out of the chief's shoulder. There was a veritable cornucopia of weaponry to choose from, but Alpha stopped them from scavenging further.
This detour has taken far too long. We must continue to the ship.
He strode onward, back to his old armorless form, only adorned with his translator and metal claw. The trip back through the residential area was largely uneventful, though they kept careful watch on the ground for any more lingering snares. They couldn't be sure the entire population of the town had now been killed by the air assault and their recent ground skirmish, but they heard no more echoing voices from the rooftops as they had before. Eventually, they did come across one more wounded cannibal who had propped himself up on a bench on the side of the road. His clothes were drenched in blood, and it was impossible to tell what uniform he might have once worn, if any. He didn't even look up as they approached, and simply kept breathing with a painful whine as his eyes were fixed straight ahead. The extent of his injuries was unclear, but no longer mattered after Lucas put a slug through his temple from 10 yards out. Leaving him was a needless risk. They moved through the stone houses until they eventually reached another clearing, one quite different from the gory town square they'd just left. Before them loomed the massive mothership, and in front of it, a few hundred yards away, was a mansion that could easily be classified as a small castle. It was the building they had seen the chief emerge from in the bird's eye view of the probe, but it, like him, was far more impressive up close. Like practically everything in the city, it was also made out of stone, but looked quite a bit older than the other buildings. There were circular towers with slits in them for archers, and Lucas imagined this might have been a small fortress in a medieval age. In modern times, it was likely owned by the mayor or some rich fishing baron until it had been appropriated by the cannibal chief. The stonework was crumbling in places, but looked impressively intact for a building that had been cut in half by a downed alien spacecraft. They approached the mansion, moving through a long courtyard as they did so. The once manicured grass had now turned brown and crispy, and shrubs that had been symmetrically planted with precision were mere sticks. A giant stone fountain stood in the middle of the yard, and three angels held a bowl aloft, though it and the surrounding base were long empty of any water. One was missing a head and another a wing, but it was in quite good condition given the town's current residence, and the entire area looked free of damage from Asha's hellfire barrage. Presumably, she was saving the section for a later pass that never came. The three of them kept their eyes trained on the windows of the mansion, all of which were broken, but no yellow eyes or glinting sniper scopes appeared in them. No roommates for the chief, it seemed. As they reached the door, Alpha brought up a hologram from his claw that showed the layout of the mothership. It spread wide over their field of vision, and after a few swirls of his claw, it pointed out that the nearby entry bays were either 100 feet in the air, 50 underground, or on the other side of the mansion. Lucas and Asha began to pry open the ornately carved oak doors, which let out a prolonged creak as they parted. The interior was dim and likely hadn't seen electricity in years, but light seeped in through the broken windows and several holes in the ceiling. A grand staircase unfurled before them, and Lucas was surprised to see the expensive-looking furnishings in the foyer were intact and arranged properly. Peering into a nearby sitting room, he saw a similarly organized setting, as did Asha when she walked into the living room to her right.
"Stay together,"
Alpha said quietly. They moved under the stairs and crept down a long hallway. It was lined with pictures that were perfectly hung but often cracked. Many were portraits of stately-looking men with curled mustaches and women with billowing dresses. At the end of the hallway, they came to the kitchen, which was pristine with every cabinet door shut and every appliance properly aligned on the counters. But on the main preparation table lay a butchered human, with most of his torso carved out and dried blood smeared everywhere around him. It was a jarring contrast to the rest of the highly organized and immaculate household. They pushed deeper into the house and walked through a pair of double doors. Before them was a vast library, and against the shattered window sat a desk where many books lay stacked, a few open. In the center was a hefty tome, full of handwritten words, and an old-fashioned, ink-stained quill lay next to it. The barbarian chief, a tidy homemaker, and an author. Who would have thought? Lucas remembered his dying words translated by Alpha about his former profession. He scooped up the book and tucked it into his pack. Alpha and Asha were transfixed on a different part of the room. They were staring at the opposite wall, which was black and smooth. Alpha was running his claw across it. "Is that?" Lucas asked.
"The ship, yes," Alpha replied. "We must find the port."
They exited through a door on the right and found themselves in a guest bedroom, complete with sheets that were perfectly tucked into the mattress without a wrinkle in sight. Again, the far wall was the same metal material, but there was still no opening. The next room was brightly lit, and looking up, Lucas saw that a ceiling simply didn't exist. Though the walls were expertly wallpapered with a green and gold pattern, there was no furniture in the entire room. On the back wall, at last, there was a closed, oval-shaped port. As Lucas approached, a circular holographic interface appeared before him. He waved his hand through it, but it immediately turned from blue to red and disappeared. Lucas looked closer at the black door and wall and saw there was writing on it. A few silver pens lay strewn on the floor, and as he stepped back and the light caught the reflective ink, Lucas saw that the scribbling encompassed nearly half of the entire wall. Alpha brushed Lucas aside and the interface returned. He made a complex series of motions as the symbols darted about on the controls.
"To think that a human could decode the key to our ship. Humorous."
Lucas saw different alien glyphs written among the Norwegian on the wall. Was this how the chief spent his free time, trying to break into this ship? Looking at the floor and edges of the wall, he saw black blast marks that appeared to indicate a more brute force method of entry had been attempted earlier. I guess that's where the ceiling went. Alpha had far better luck, and the controls had already turned green by the time Lucas walked back over to him. The door disappeared into the blackness and he stepped inside. The glowing core served as a beacon of light in the dark, and Lucas felt a tap on his shoulder. Asha handed him a small flashlight that she said she procured off a spec ops type weapon in the town square's corpse pile. She had one for herself and affixed it to her magnum as Lucas clipped his to his own barrel.
These lower levels have no power due to the impact,
Alpha said as he plugged one of his metal fingers into a socket on the wall. A virtual image of the ship appeared in front of them.
Readings indicate that the bridge and a few surrounding floors are still functional, though all primary systems are offline, including life support. The core continues to deteriorate in the engine bay. We must make haste.
Their journey through the bowels of the ship was hurried and confusing. Lucas and Asha chased Alpha as he raced down a seemingly endless number of dark hallways. Their light revealed bits of architecture that looked familiar from their own ship. Alpha had closed the schematic and presumably knew the layout by heart. It was hard to keep up with his long strides, particularly in the dark, and Lucas soon tripped and fell with a clatter. As he got to his feet, he shone his light at where he'd fallen, and his heart skipped a beat when he found the culprit. A fully mummified creature skeleton lay on the ground, still clad in power armor, its bones poked out of the material, and its lifeless fingers wrapped around an equally lifeless energy rifle. Alpha saw what had happened and read Lucas's mind.
There are no life forms on board. Watch your step.
Either the creatures had died in the crash, or they'd left their downed craft to be picked up by another. He wondered if there had even been any left when the cannibals came to town. Eventually, they moved out of winding hallways and into a room that contained pods like the ones they'd been instructed to sleep in back on board their own vessel. Lucas shined his light into them as they passed, but most of the glass was opaque. He looked over to Asha, who was directing her light upward instead. Even with minimal illumination, it was clear the room they were standing in was massive, far more so than their own barracks. There were thousands upon thousands of the pods lining the walls and arranged in columns like some oversized wasp nest. Lucas knew the ship was big, but he hadn't realized it had housed this many creatures. And was this even the biggest craft in their fleet? He turned to ask Alpha, but he had left the pair of them behind in their awe and was just a faint blue glow up ahead. They picked up the pace to keep up with him and eventually left the empty hive behind, sidestepping another set of dusty creature bones as they went. There were more hallways ahead, and Alpha's assurance that there were no living beings on board did not make the surroundings any less foreboding. More mummified creatures lay on the ground, and sporadically there was a splash of long-dried black blood on the walls. The surviving creatures must have been ordered out of the ship in a hurry to leave so many of their fallen behind. Alpha's pace was quickening, and it was getting physically painful to keep up, particularly with the recent knife through Lucas's quadricep and his now free-floating bottom ribs. Even Asha appeared to be getting winded, but despite his own injuries, Alpha was sprinting ahead with long-legged strides. Gas streamed out of a broken section of the wall, but as Alpha plowed through it without hesitation, Lucas assumed he could as well. Moving through the mist, he thought it smelled a bit like sulfur, but mixed with oranges? That couldn't be right. Whatever the compound was, it hadn't melted his skin, so he trudged onward as blood seeped through his makeshift bandage with each step. Asha swatted away a swath of cables that hung down like vines from the torn apart ceiling. The blue glow they were chasing, emitted from Alpha's core, began to grow brighter, and it was getting lighter in color as well. As they rounded the next corner, they saw it was no longer his core producing the light. The room before them was circular and massive, a far cry from the dank hallways they'd been running through. A few lights flickered around the room, but in the dead center rested a point of brilliant white light surrounded by thick columns of machinery. Every so often it would falter in sync with the others and go out, leaving the room in utter darkness, but would soon kick back on. It reminded Lucas of his first encounter with a sputtering blue light in the red sky back in Portland. Alpha wasted no time and leapt down an entire staircase to reach the center of the room where the white core rested. He jammed his own core into a slot in one of the pillars. A holographic interface appeared, and he began furiously swirling his organic and metal claws over the display. Eventually, the core stopped flickering and shone more brightly than ever before, illuminating the surrounding room like sunlight. Soon it was almost impossible to look at the core directly, and Lucas was already seeing spots. Asha held her hand over her eyes. "Never thought I'd need sunglasses again," she said. It really was the closest thing to the sun either of them had seen in years. Alpha pressed a few more virtual buttons, and a cylinder slid up and over the core, decreasing its brightness dramatically. Grabbing a piece of metal that lined up the top, he detached it completely from the unit. It was larger than the blue core, but only just so. It measured about 3 feet tall and 18 inches in diameter, but Alpha hoisted it off its pedestal with ease. Either it was lighter than it looked, or his bionic claw was dramatically increasing his strength. With his other hand, he pulled the blue core back out of the device, and the room was lit with a dim combination of white and azure light. He hadn't spoken in some time, and finally appeared to be out of breath himself. "So, we saved it?" Lucas asked, motioning to the white core with his rifle-mounted flashlight. Alpha nodded. "The core was at 0.8% capacity when we reached it. It would have been unsalvageable in a short while. That was the reason for our haste."
"And what exactly is this again?" Asha asked.
"The scientific complexities of the device would escape you. Suffice it to say, it is, what is the colloquialism? It is our ticket out of here."
"And you're saying it can make our ship travel into space?" said Lucas as he raised his eyebrow.
"We have that functionality currently. What it will allow us to do is leave this star system entirely and return to by means of attempting a—"
Alpha was visibly annoyed by his own translation limitations.
"I cannot convey the exact nature of what we are about to attempt, but we will leave this planet and you will never return. That is, in the event I am, in fact, able to equip our vessel with this core, and we do not end up as stardust once we activate it."
"How reassuring," Asha said. Their trip back through the bowels of the ship was more relaxed, and Lucas's thigh was incredibly grateful. He was still wheezing thanks to his ribs, but the slower pace made everything less painful. Their way back was even more brightly lit from Alpha's supplementary white light source, though it was nice that it was no longer burning their retinas, as the polarized cylinder kept it a reasonable brightness. They backtracked through the ship, the mansion, and town, until they once again came upon the grisly pile of bodies in the square. Blood trails on the ground indicated a few of the cannibals weren't quite dead when the group left and had limped or crawled away. One of the trails ended with a lifeless man about 30 yards away, but a few continued down adjoining streets. Lucas scanned windows, but they were likely not in fighting shape, and hunting them down wouldn't be worth the risk. To their left, the once burning church was now a smoldering ruin. Asha had stepped into the body pile and was picking through equipment and weapons. Alpha stopped and turned around.
"There will be time for that later. We must get the core back to the ship while avoiding further ambush."
"Just one for the road," Asha said as she picked up a compact submachine gun and slung it over her shoulder. Lucas scooped up a few lingering shotgun shells resting in a pool of blood and continued onward. Nothing jumped out from the shadows on the way back through the destroyed shops, and their nerves had finally settled by the time they reached the mouth of the bay. Their ship loomed ahead of them, past the sea of wrecked boats in various stages of decay. Their craft was indeed quite large and would dwarf any man-made airplane, but it was minuscule compared to the mothership they'd just left. Though he didn't understand the specifics of the device they now possessed, Lucas wondered if fitting the new core to their ship would be like putting a Ferrari engine in a Fiat. It might be a hell of an upgrade, but it could probably blow the entire thing up as well. As they drew closer to the craft, an unfamiliar shape lay against the disturbed earth where the landing gear had touched down. It appeared to be a body, and after a quick signal from Lucas to the rest of the party, he and Asha raised their weapons as the unarmed Alpha fell back behind them. The form was lifeless, however, and as they approached, Lucas could see who it was. The old woman,
who had been pleading with them earlier at the church, was now lying against the ship's landing prong, and she appeared to be even more badly burned than she was previously.
"Guess she wanted a ride out of here,"
Asha said as she instinctively bent down to search the body for loot. But she immediately jumped back with a look of complete terror on her face, an expression Lucas had never seen her wear. He approached the body and saw what had shocked her so. An infant lay in the woman's burnt arms. A live infant. Behind him, Alpha spoke.
"Barna. Barna,"
he said slowly.
"The children. The children."
Chapter 8. The three of them stood on the bridge of the ship staring at the child, which had been placed on the hollow table. Its breath was shallow and it was skinny, obviously malnourished. Its left arm and shoulder were covered in burns that Alpha had treated with his pocket-sized healing device, which had also sewn up Lucas's leg wound with a hissing gelatinous substance. A few dirty plastic bottles of milk lay strewn around it, taken from the dead woman's pack. It was Asha who finally spoke.
"God damn."
It was a mix of revulsion and reverence. Lucas kept silent, but he agreed with the sentiment. He hadn't seen a child in years, except for his own in the picture in his boot. To be standing before one now was stranger than being on an alien starship. Finally, he spoke. "I knew they were setting up some sort of society down there, but I never imagined they'd take it this far. Did they really think they could start over?
More like they didn't know how to perform an abortion after knocking up one of their chained rape slaves,"
Asha said with disgust. Lucas speculated that perhaps she had targeted that church on purpose, an act of mercy in her eyes. Alpha was scanning the child with a small device and read through the information that sprung up in front of him.
"He is stable."
They hadn't bothered to check if it was a boy or girl yet, and this was the first they'd heard of its gender. He had opened his blue eyes only briefly until he succumbed to whatever Alpha had given him, and currently lay asleep with wisps of singed blonde hair on his head, his face smudged with dirt and smoke. He couldn't have been more than 6 months old, 8 maybe? It had been a long while since Lucas's own son had been that age, and he was never good with those sort of estimations. Asha asked the impolite question on everyone's mind.
"What do we do with him?"
Lucas had killed many things over the past few years, human, animal, and creature. But there was something gnawing at him about this child. Could they leave it here? Throw it back into town to die of exposure? Or become some surviving cannibal's mid-morning snack? The thought was gut-wrenching.
"He has food,"
Lucas said helpfully, motioning to the bottles on the table.
"That will last a few days at the most. Have you never babysat before? Jesus!"
Lucas didn't reveal his past experience raising a child, though to be fair, he hadn't been around all that often. Alpha spoke after turning the thought over in his mind.
"We have barely enough food to feed ourselves, much less a child. Such a specimen, however, would be fascinating to study, as I know little about the early development of your localized species."
"It's not a science project," Lucas said, a bit annoyed.
Alpha ignored him and continued.
"Furthermore, it is a preferable companion to the remaining bloodthirsty citizens of your planet. You do not wish to further preserve what little is left of your kind?"
Lucas was flustered.
"Of course I do, but Asha's right. How do we feed it?"
Alpha paused, then checked a readout on his wrist hologram. It showed a spinning image of the mothership.
"There may be a way."
Alpha outlined a plan that involved returning to the ship they'd just left. Apparently, when he plugged into its mainframe, his translator was garbled until it finally settled on that word. He saw that, among the upper levels of the ship that were online, an entire room full of rations were still being kept fresh. It wasn't food in the traditional human sense, but rather nutrients was as best as Alpha could put it. The substance was made up of proteins and other essential vitamins that would sustain the life of his species. Usually they were fed to them in a gaseous form during their nightly rest inside the pods. This ship's supply was dry, but the manifest revealed the mothership had a large supply under lock and key. Alpha didn't know how the nutrients would react with human biology, but explained it was the only hope for all of them, the child included. He mused that the child could in fact survive and potentially even thrive on the gaseous diet. None of them raised the point of what they would do with the child besides feed it, but that was a concern for another time. The general consensus was, however, not to throw him out into the desert. Even with all the stone hearts in the room, forged out of years of misery, they couldn't inflict such a horror on something so helpless. "If this thing cries all the time, it's going out an airlock," had been Asha's final word on the subject, even though Lucas suspected she hadn't meant it. In truth, the child hadn't cried once since they'd brought it on board. Lucas wondered what sort of traumas he'd endured in the village, and how long they'd stay with him as he grew. That was, provided he survived for any length of time, under the watch of two mass murderers and a traitorous extraterrestrial. The plan was for Lucas and Asha to be dropped onto the roof of the mothership by Alpha, as trekking up through the bottom was impossible with those floors mostly destroyed. There would be no way down to the engine bay or any of the adjoining areas, which Alpha explained was why they hadn't gone in that way in the first place. Alpha took the captain's chair and raised the ship as Lucas and Asha made their way to the storage bay from which they would depart. The child was secured inside a scrap metal cylinder lined with whatever fabric they could spare, which included Asha's old dress and the cloth in which the dead woman had wrapped him. Everything else had been too drenched in blood to be sanitary. The cylinder was secured to the floor with Alpha's fusion tool, and he claimed he would create better accommodations for the child once he had finished installing the new core. He said that would be a time-consuming process, as every calculation had to be perfect, or else they would be torn asunder on the molecular level. He was developing quite a flair for the dramatic. The storage bay was empty, save for a few metal crates that had been pried open and looted. As they soared over the village and approached the top of the mothership, Alpha spoke through the comm, his voice booming through the barren metal chamber. "When the floor opens, step into the light." At that moment, the floor did indeed open, and about 40 feet down was the top of the ship. A column of blue light shone around the opening. "You first," Asha said, forever cautious. Lucas was hesitant, as an unimpeded fall would surely kill him, or at the very least snap his legs like twigs. But he was beginning to take Alpha's word as gospel. It was strange to be able to trust someone again. He jumped. After a split second of terrifying freefall, in which his stomach rose into his lungs, his descent slowed dramatically as the beam of light caught him. He'd never experienced true weightlessness, and wondered if this was always what it was like. He was perfectly comfortable and barely had time to register the fact he was floating until his feet touched down on the ground. Satisfied Lucas had not ended up as a stain on the ship's hull, Asha made her own leap of faith. Lucas stepped out of the light and watched her combat boots heading down the column. As her face came into view, she too seemed amazed by the process. She looked almost angelic as she descended, silhouetted against the blue light with the red, crackling sky behind her. An angel of death, perhaps, but ethereal nonetheless. She landed gracefully on the top of the ship. Above them, Alpha took the transport and steered it back toward the bay, its engine shining a bright blue as it retreated. Lucas took out a small cylindrical disc Alpha had given him, and a holographic countdown timer appeared. He'd be back in a little over 3 hours. As the ship moved into the distance, they looked out over the town. It was an angle they hadn't seen from the air, and the smoke was finally starting to clear from the burned buildings. Nearly all the remaining fires had died out. Lucas thought to try and look down on the mansion, but resisted getting too near the edge. The winds were gusting strongly 1,000 feet up, and it was hard to keep his balance. Asha was staying low and having an easier time of it. A hologram in his hand pointed the way to an entry port on top of the ship. He tried yelling at Asha, but the wind was too loud for her to hear. She put her hand to her ear and shook her head, mouthing, "What?" He pointed up ahead of him and started walking that direction, taking each step with care. Asha understood where he was going and followed. When he arrived at the portal, he stuck the disk in the center like Alpha had instructed him. According to him, the device was multi-use. It would display maps and other data, but more importantly, Alpha had designed the device as an improvised hacking tool, a key that would open any door on the ship. It did its job quickly, and the controls turned green as the door slid open. Lucas peered inside with his rifle-mounted light and saw the floor a short ways down. He sat on the edge of the door and lowered himself down slowly. There was no reason to further agitate his healing leg, and his ribs still made every breath hurt, even though Alpha assured him they were on the mend. Lucas landed as softly as he could manage. Light filtered in through the hole above him. Though these levels once had power, they were fully offline now that Alpha had removed the central core. Reaching into his pack, Lucas pulled out the blue core that powered their own ship. Alpha said even a sliver of the more powerful white core's energy would be more than enough to power their own craft, and the blue one would be necessary to turn the lights back on. It was amusing to watch him get the hang of common English phrases. Asha dropped down behind Lucas, landing on a tangle of cables spilling out of the wall and almost falling on her face. It was a somewhat less majestic descent than the one she'd made from the ship. Lucas held the core up like a lantern while consulting a three-dimensional map on the disk in his other hand. Despite Alpha's proclamation that the ship was free of life, Asha had her magnum drawn anyway with a small flashlight fixed to its barrel. They crept through a winding corridor for a bit, Lucas keeping his eyes trained on the dot moving through the three-dimensional blueprint sprouting out of the device in his hand. The path soon dead-ended at a massive door, a much larger version of the ones they had in their own ship. A small holographic interface appeared at Lucas's eye level, and he held the disk inside of it. It took a few more minutes to sift through the symbols, but in the end, the door slid upwards with a groan. It clearly hadn't been opened in ages. According to the map, this was the bridge. A long corridor stretched out before them, and with their dim lighting, Lucas couldn't even see where it ended. Consoles lined the walls, but no lights flickered. He and Asha moved slowly toward the end of the room, her gun still trained on whatever ghosts may have been lurking in the tomb. The light revealed a number of skeletal creatures lining the ground, some with power armor, others without. One skull was fully lodged inside a shattered workstation. A fine film of dust coated everything, and particles danced in the air around them, disturbed by the unsealing of the door. As they approached the center of the room, Lucas saw a much larger version of the hollow table they had in their own ship. It was what he was looking for, and on Alpha's instructions, he searched its base for an opening. He found it around the backside of the console and slid the blue core inside. The bridge came alive in an instant. Screens and control clusters surged to life all around them, and at the front of the room, the main command center was now online. It was a wide, curved interface that looked to be manned by 4 or 5 officers at least. Above it was a massive view screen that was a jumble of alien information, though pieces of the screen were glitching and a few remained completely dark. The hollow table now displayed a galaxy that Lucas recognized as the unmistakable spiral of the Milky Way. Of immediate interest was a series of annotations that marked it. Points were tagged along many of the arms on the right side. Though it was impossible to read the symbols, it was what they were describing that caught Lucas's eye. Each point of interest showed a planet. They weren't any Lucas had ever seen, and most were largely white, brown, and green, with small pockets of blue that had to be water. One of the furthest out dots was Earth, which had more blue than all the other bodies, save one large sphere that had oceans even more vast than their own. Nearby the large planet was a distinctive red rock streaked with only minimal amounts of blue and green. "What is that?" Asha asked as she walked over, finally lowering her gun. "I think it's our roadmap out of here." He waved his fingers through one of the planets. What were all these places? Where were they? He tried to play with the foreign controls, but received no response or further information. Consulting the pocket map once again, they left the room through an adjacent door and headed down a ways toward their next objective. The nutrients were a few sections away, but it was now much easier to travel with the area powered up. The corridors they walked through were damaged, but hardly to the degree the lower floors had been, crushed under a million tons of steel or whatever the hell the thing was made of. He'd have to ask Alpha about that at some point. The broken English on the map readout informed them they were now approaching the nutrient surplus area room, ahead of them on their left. A long door was embedded in the wall, and Lucas had to search for some time to find the controls. Asher was already poking around the next corner, but returned to him when the door slid up into the ceiling. The room was a mess, with storage cubes scattered around everywhere, a few having burst open with tiny clear vials coating the floor. Lucas consulted his readout, which Alpha had programmed with a visual depiction of the nutrients, and saw that they were in fact the small cylinders littered all around them. An open crate, about 3 feet